It's so hard for me to sit back here in this studio looking at a guy out here hollering my name when last year I spent more money on spilled liquor in bars from one side of this world to the other than you made. You're talking to the Rolex wearing, diamond ring wearing, kiss stealing, woo, wheeling dealing, limousine riding, jet flying, son of a gun, and I'm having a hard time holding these alligators down. Woo!
To all hustlers with the same interests. Bow your heads as the Lord's ministry.
Welcome, everybody, to Bauer and Pollock. It's John Pollock with you from Live Audio Wrestling, joined as always by MLW Radio's Court Bauer. Court, it's been 2 weeks. Have you missed me?
I thought it only had been 1 week, but you're right. It has been 2 weeks. I've missed you a lot, John Pollock. How was your road trip to Buffalo?
It was Buffalo, Court. There's a reason you don't live in that part of New York, is there? Would you ever move to Buffalo?
It's not in the plans.
Yeah, Buffalo gets a bad rap. It's fine. It's very convenient for us Canadians when we want to just take a peek at what our American neighbors are up to. It's an easy drive, relatively easy border to pass, and then we're back within the same day. So I can't complain too much about Buffalo.
It's a serviceable city.
Wow, that should be on the Welcome to Buffalo. It's a serviceable city.
Nothing wrong with being serviceable.
I want to chat about your country for a little bit.
Oh, great. What do you want to talk about?
Did you watch both, either, or none of the recent speeches by Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton over the past 2 weeks? And what are some of your feelings coming out of these conventions if either candidate has moved you one way or the other?
Yeah, I'm thinking about moving to an island far away. That's the only plans I've been making the last 2 weeks.
Man, Donald Trump is on damage control, I feel, on this Friday morning. I mean, you could see Friday morning, it was as though he had DVR'd Hillary's speech and he was watching it at around 9:30 in the morning, because then you just saw him going and going and going, critiquing Hillary's speech. I don't think he was watching this thing live the night prior, or at least that was the impression he gave. But most people are kind of... commending Hillary for a much more level-headed speech, and we've got a clear divide here, though some people are just frightened at both candidates.
I am in the category of concerned by all outcomes.
Wow. Well, leave it to the Canadian to hopefully show some optimism here.
John, this does concern me for once. I am very concerned.
Who would have been the ideal candidate this year, whether it be a Republican or a Democrat? Because it seems this was the year that most undecided voters would be willing to go with just about anybody at this point.
I'm going to go with getting in the time machine and going back to the past, because the future, I don't see anything really blowing me away. I think it's easier to find some sort of time traveling science to make that possible than find a great candidate, because I look around and I'm so unspectacular. It's unbelievable. I'm not big into politics for a reason. Every time I check in, I quickly check out.
I wanted to get your endorsement here on the show.
Listen,
as an American citizen, where is the MLW endorsement going to go?
if it was up to me, I don't think I'd be making an endorsement on our behalf for any of the candidates. We are going to see in 4 years. I think with either candidate, you're likely looking at maybe in 4 years, it being a very difficult election year to get another four. But maybe either of them will prove me wrong. I'm hardened skeptic based on last 2 decades of leadership in here in the States. Just not blown away.
What about Dana White's speech? Did you happen to see that?
Didn't see it.
Oh boy, this is only 4 minutes. You really should go out of your way to hear Dana White endorse his pal Donald Trump and the greatest kickoff to a speech at the RNC. What's up, GOP?
I just think of the Ultimate Fire. Do you want to be in the fucking Ultimate Fire?
Well, he got up there and he was like yelling like he was at a press conference, like I was getting ready for who's got the first question. He was just up there and he did his usual Dana, like, I'm talking to you, but I don't realize how loud I am projecting this at you at home. I think everybody could have heard him with or without a microphone up there.
Listen, you got to play to your strengths, and that's who Dana is. He shouldn't have been anything but Dana White. And I was waiting for someone to come off on the Democrat side in Philadelphia. I guess maybe Jim Cornette, who is a big-time liberal, maybe could have represented that other end of the spectrum. Listen up, you know, here, motherfuckers. Woo! It could have happened.
It was funny. Last week, Bob Arum was the one who – he was doing a media event promoting the fights from last weekend. And he started talking about Dana White appearing at this, and he said how – well, of course, MMA fans are all Republicans. They're all for Trump, whereas boxing fans are Democrats. So he has put this line in the sand, and then he went on to call Chris Christie a fat son of a bitch.
Jesus Christ, WrestleMania 33, here we come.
You got to listen to this Bob Arum speech. That's your homework. The Dana White RNC speech, Bob Arum's response the day afterwards. There's some great tie-ins with the combat sports world and this year's race. Not to mention we have a WWE Hall of Famer that is the Republican nominee.
Yeah, this is all just going to accelerate my race to find some other place to live.
Were you ever involved in any of the SmackDown Your Vote stuff? Was that done by the time you were there, or was that stuff still going on?
I have no recollection. I don't think I was. If it was going on, it was handled by another department, not the creative team, really, other than probably inserting.
I think you were there during the Bush-Kerry race, if I'm not mistaken. Were you there by November of 2004? I think
no,
so.
No, I was not.
Oh, you weren't?
No.
Okay, well, then that eliminates that. Let us move on to the politics of professional wrestling, which are always difficult to navigate. Mm-hmm. But something that hasn't been too difficult to navigate, if you're Brock Lesnar, is the WWE wellness policy. I think he cleared that full on like a high jumper here going over the bar.
Well,
Brock Lesnar, I mean, what do you make of this statement that the WWE put out? And are you surprised that the WWE was so forthcoming to put it in writing in this statement that our part-time performers are actually not subjected to the wellness policy?
Yes and no. I don't think anyone can fault Brock Lesnar for trying to get those provisions and succeeding. It tells me about the wellness policy, and I don't think a lot of people are surprised by that. If you look at some of the part-timers, you wonder how they look so damn amazing. Is it genetics? Who knows? But they're not being tested, so we don't know. And you can definitely say, what's going on there? The flip side of the wellness policy, because there you can definitely critique it, and you can say, well, compare it to the Olympics, compare it to UFC. I mean, every wellness policy, everyone has their policy, and you have to update them because the science of how you beat them changes so quickly. And then you have weird things like the WWE carving this out for part-timers. It's an interesting strategy, and I get it. But at the same time, their wellness policy has done a lot of good. I know someone that saved their life twice. Just their tests alone have saved one individual I know, that person's life twice. So it's amazing all the positives. I just hope that it never gets to a point where the tests are completely compromised. We've, of course, seen that they were – those tests are up to snuff in some ways because Roman Reigns was suspended, and there's a lot of speculation on what it was, and a lot of people think it was something else. I don't know. I've heard just a lot of speculation, so I'm not going to throw it out there and pour more gas on the fire because I don't know. Until WWE's forthcoming with that, if they wish to be, if Roman Reigns gives them the blessing to be, then that's on them. But in general, I think the policies have been good, but it is curious to see that this is carved out.
I think it just gives a clearer picture of at least the construction of the wellness policy. I'm not going to dispute that there is a lot of good that comes out of having this. Certainly much better than where we were pre-wellness policy.
Absolutely.
Where you had, I mean, the Vince McMahon statement at the time, well, when are you going to test a guy? Well, if we see someone with a syringe in their ass, we'll be suspicious and we'll test them. I mean, that was largely it. It was a head-in-the-sand mentality when it came to testing.
There was once a guy – I'm not going to name names – but there was a guy that did get a needle stuck in his ass and then went to the doctor to have it extracted – because we don't want an infection. Goddamn, a needle stuck in your ass. This is fucking terrifying if it's me. And then inexplicably had the audacity to then
– I know this story.
Bill the procedure, the doctor visit to WWE. This was not well advised. And
yeah, they unfortunately had to come to the automatic conclusion, rightly so, that we can only not – we can't compensate you for this. We also have to release you.
Just though he, based on though he has, stupidity for that one. That was – everyone has their moment. We all do. Not a good call.
Well, yeah, I guess that's certainly taking a risk. I just look at it that, A, if I am a full-time performer – I certainly look at this as a double standard, especially come WrestleMania time when WrestleMania is largely occupied by a lot of part-timers. Second, and some people might laugh at this, whatever, if you would happen to be a part-timer that is not on stuff, I would not want to be – you're essentially guilty by association now, because I think there is a certain skepticism now amongst any part-time performer in the company. And what you want to label as a part-time performer, whether they have – whether they are clean or not, and that might be a naive way to look at things. But they've kind of told you, okay, here's a massive hole in our policy. And I get the sense that this company, they've said it before in those congressional hearings. This is PR. This wellness policy is here for PR purposes. And I think if they had their way about things, I don't know how much they would push to have testing unless they felt they needed it in today's climate.
And the bottom line is it has gotten great results. You look at the mortality issue and how many wrestlers' lives have been saved. Personally, I know of them. And it's done a
it's
lot.
It's a very different era now.
God,
in
yes.
Terms of, you're not seeing this where it felt court at times. It was a weekly basis. It was somebody found and hearing about enlarged hearts. And you did not have to be a coroner to put this together, that this lifestyle and this mixture is probably not going to add to your longevity in life. And that certainly has been curbed significantly.
And thankfully, I don't care what your motive is. It's the results I care about, and keeping consistent with that wellness policy. You said double, you know, is there a double standard in wrestling? There's always been a double standard in wrestling for behavior, for misconduct, for everything, opportunity. I'm not saying it's a cop out. It is a cop out. But that's always going to be the case, whether it's this sort of thing or something else. It's just part of showbiz and part of pro wrestling.
Well, we have lots to discuss on this week's show beyond just Brock Lesnar. But the WWE came out with their financials this week for the second quarter, which it covers WrestleMania 32 from Texas earlier this year. And, of course, the number that always is the most intriguing is the network subscriptions. And as of June 30th, just over 1.5 million subs. And their average was at that mark as well for the quarter. So There was a churn of 471,000 subscribers. So that would be people that signed up for it for free for WrestleMania and then after WrestleMania dropped the service. But there was some retention there, Court, as well.
Yeah, and I think that's what they're looking at is the retention and trying to get that boost WrestleMania season and hoping enough stay that you can continue to build and build and build and go north, not south, with your subscribers.
Yeah, and you're seeing those growth patterns at least each year. It seems that each year that we continue with this, you are seeing more people sample it around WrestleMania. You are keeping some of them, not all. There's still people that they're just going to click in for WrestleMania and then they're gone. But you are seeing slow growth amongst this network. And the fact that they're averaging now for a quarter 1.5 million, I'm fairly confident they can keep that average for this next quarter coming up. Though the post-WrestleMania quarter is always an interesting one when you don't necessarily have the same hook of WrestleMania that you do with, say, a SummerSlam, for instance. But, I mean, they're... The strategy, this thing wasn't a home run on day one, but you're seeing year over year that people are migrating to this service, and it's turning into a notable average that they've been able to put together.
Yeah, and I think it's going to go in that direction now. It's a matter of how much do you need to put out to keep that number going north? How much do you, in terms of original content, is going to be too much in terms of your budget and the benefit of investing that money? We'll see. There is definitely that point where the scales tip and you're spending too much on content and it's not worth it.
If the WWE were to call you up, Court, and they tell you, hey, Court, we've been eyeing that MLW video library of yours for some time
now. 8 or 10 shows, yes.
Do you think, as someone that has any kind of video library that is still out there, that's not owned by the WWE, is the value higher today versus 5 years ago? Because we're seeing what people are watching in the highest amount of volume on the network. And it's new programming, it's the pay-per-views, it's NXT, it's not the old libraries. Do you think there's still a value? Has the value of libraries out there diminished with what they have learned of what people are watching on the network?
Yeah, I think it's changed a lot. I mean, one of the biggest performers for the network is the Steve Austin podcast, Stone Cold Podcast. Doing these live events have been big. Some of the other stuff that they had hoped would be big, like acquiring all these libraries, turns out that isn't a big thing for a lot of people. And it's great because they get real-time stats. They can look at this on a day-to-day basis and know where they're going and how things are performing, and they evaluate what path they want to take, not just a month from now, but next week and what's a priority. And you can see what they've put the focus on. And it's interesting just looking at how they promote things in advance now. They have a little bit more of a window to promote things, like the Steve Austin, Dean Ambrose podcast. In the past, that would have been promoted maybe on 7-day notice, and now you get a little bit more time. I think they're doing that on the 8th of August. So we know where Steve Austin's going to be and who he's going to be interviewing over 2 weeks in advance. That's not bad in terms of promotion to have that half a month out. The network, I love the network. I really enjoy it. Not all of it's for me, but nor should it. It should be a little bit for everyone. And I think you accomplished that with the libraries. I think it's still to their advantage to try to acquire the valuable libraries that remain out there. There's a few. There's Portland has a big chunk of footage still available. There's the weird Memphis library, which is like the Da Vinci Code in a treasure hunt, trying to track it all down and figure out what it all means and who has it. I mean, that thing is a disaster and it's a tragedy. But there's a few libraries still out there that they should pursue, and I'm sure they will.
Man, what a lost opportunity not doing the podcast with Austin and Brock Lesnar. That one would be interesting.
Interesting.
Is that part of Brock's contract too? No more interviews? No podcast interviews?
Maybe only Paul Heyman. And that's another one, is will Paul Heyman be with Brock Lesnar on Monday night?
Yeah, his contract was up. Mm-hmm. And as of right now, we don't know if a new deal has been reached. And Monday, I mean, he could be there with or without a contract. If he's not there, I think that would be telling of where things are going. But I think most anticipate he will be back in time for all the SummerSlam lead up. And Brock is scheduled for Beyond Monday, also on August 15th in Corpus Christi. So it looks like two appearances before the match with Randy Orton. And then I imagine Brock goes into hibernation.
Well, you know, there's also the WWE cookout at the offices. I'm sure he'll make an appearance, grill some burgers. He'll probably bring the meat, having hunted it and killed it earlier in the day. So he'll make that appearance, too, for just, you know, the company. But I'm guessing Brock is accompanied by Paul Heyman on Monday. But we'll see.
Also, soon to make his return, Brock Lesnar's former coach, Shelton Benjamin, who they announced on SmackDown this week with a vignette that he will be coming back to SmackDown. Of course, a lot of names have been rumored. Do you like this return of Shelton Benjamin and plucking some guys from the past at this point? If you haven't been watching him, Benjamin has been with Pro Wrestling Noah for the majority of the past 2 years or so, part of a Suzuki Gun.
And before that, he was with New Japan. It's kind of a talent trade of sorts. So he's been primarily over in Japan. He did a little bit with Ring of Honor right out of the gates when he left WWE. But it's hard to believe he's been gone for 6 years, over half a decade. He's been a free agent. And he left WWE around 34, 35, and now he's past the 40-year-old mark. And my big question is seeing how he's going to be able to hold up, because he really, really was a very athletic, cutting-edge wrestler. He was a workhorse for WWE back in the day. He wasn't what I would call a character-driven talent. He was a workhorse. So once you get north of 40, it's a different proposition. It's going to be a different role for him. But I'm sure he's going to do fine in that role. And I'm curious to see who else pops up, Curt Hawkins, et cetera. I guess they are factored into the SmackDown equation at some point. I would love to see a Major Brothers reunion, but I doubt we're going to ever get that.
There you go. The Major Brothers. What do you think of the SmackDown?
I love the Major Brothers. They were awesome.
That's a tag team name I have not heard in quite a long time, with those two linked together. What do you think of the
not
SmackDown?
By the way, not Shelton Benjamin and Curt Hawkins. That was Curt Hawkins and Zack Ryder.
Yes.
Don't want anyone confused that they were brothers.
On the SmackDown roster, what are the needs for that roster at this point? Because I think we can look at the discrepancy at this point and what SmackDown could utilize.
They probably need to turn AJ babyface at some point, because I think he's just more – without the club, he's really going to have a hard time being a solo heel. I think he did very well as a heel with them. I just think you're fighting something by keeping him – heel. I think that was premature. I think he has that run in him, but I see there's more upside in a babyface run. Now, Dean Ambrose and AJ having matches and Orton and AJ having matches are great. You need more depth, just straight up. You need more depth. And where do you get that? How do you get that? The quick fix is to always sign guys. Now, who can you sign that's available? Johnny Mundo is not available. Rey Mysterio is not available. And so where else do you look? Do you look to Japan? Who's available? Who's touring over there? I don't know what's a good fit that would just right off the street be able to fit in that upper echelon SmackDown roster. I don't really have a good sense for who you could bring in right now. A guy like Dave Bautista would have been fantastic in a part-time role or however he would want to do it, because – he'd bring star power, and that could create some interesting matchups on the SmackDown side. But having heard him recently on the writer's room, he was pretty strong about his feelings towards WWE, so I don't see that. Now, Bill Goldberg, if he's going to do it, it's now or never. I mean, really, we're at that point. It's now or never, and I don't know where that stands. You seem to think, you know, because of the 2K announcement, maybe he would be doing something, even on a very part-time basis. But obviously that hasn't happened either.
Well, how about that promotional tie-in? You can go to the writer's room to listen to Dave Bautista's thoughts, and you can go to liveaudiowrestling.com, where we just put up our full interview with Bill Goldberg with his thoughts on the topic.
And then we're going to get them together for a point-counterpoint on Bauer and Pollock, but just about now, politics.
Oh, that actually, I talked in the first 5 minutes with Bill Goldberg is discussing politics.
Oh, no, so wrestlers and politics. I'm tapping.
If you want to check that out. What did you think of week one of the brand split? The good, the bad, and the what the fuck were they thinking?
Oh, like everyone else, Rob really hit it out of the park. I loved it. A lot of the new stuff you saw that will be part of the new era was displayed on Monday night. So by Tuesday, it's kind of old news. I still loved it, but it was not the same. The Universal title's a regrettable thing, but they were going to do it. And of course, what's bigger than the world? The universe. So poor SmackDown sliding down, even though they have the lineage and all that stuff with the WWE World Championship, or WWE Championship, as I think they might be calling it soon. It is what it is. SmackDown, we'll see where they go with the show. I think it would be cool to add some elements like they used to do, like when Eric Bischoff and Paul Heyman were running SmackDown and Raw. They would do that swipe at the beginning of the show with their face, and it's just like, yep, that's their – that it's the regime, and you know who's in charge of this thing. After the WWE signature, you see that swipe with their picture, and then it would go to the open. And I actually like that little touch. It doesn't work very well with Shane and Daniel Bryan as much as I think it would with Stephanie. Maybe just have the GMs and not the commissioners on it. But those little touches I think that they could do to make these shows even bigger and crazier and cooler. But if you peel back a lot of the aesthetic changes, some of those little things like I like the interviews and stuff after the show or after the matches.
Yes.
Still the format's the same. When they go to break, how they go to break, why they go to break, where they shoot their angles, nothing's changed. The format since 95 is still the same format. They haven't really broken new ground per se, but a lot of the superficial changes are really nice.
Yeah, I thought the structure of SmackDown, I think they put themselves in a tough position, because the story of SmackDown was crowning a new number one contender, giving the women a long match, and you had the authority figures essentially take a step away from the spotlight and establish that off the top. You pretty much mirrored what Raw did so spectacular the night prior that you couldn't help but compare the two. And also starting off at that Battle Royal, I think that really shined a light onto the depth issues you have on SmackDown when you have this Battle Royal with the majority of your roster and you're looking at the Eric Rowans and the Canes in this Battle Royal. I mean, to me, a Battle Royal was not a smart play for SmackDown, which is, it's a limited roster in comparison.
It is a limited roster. And, even going back to the draft, they kind of set the tone for the flagship and the B show. And, it played forward this week. And, the whole reason the draft was on SmackDown was to make it feel like a bigger show. But we're falling back into the same trappings that we did when I was there.
It just seems very puzzling, some of the ideas, even the cruiserweight division going to Raw. I don't even know why you had to make that division exclusive to one over the other. SmackDown needs bodies, and it just makes, to me, so much logical sense that you would have cruiserweight representation on the show that has Daniel Bryan, that has Mauro Ranallo, and that you are pushing as being a very new and innovative show. If you're bringing in a huge amount of those cruiserweights, there's more than enough room to put them on both rosters if you want them on Monday and Tuesday.
Well, another question is why shine a light on it basically 30 to 45 days beforehand unless you really have some promotional juice or guy that you can put the whole thing around as a franchise player for the division, which they don't have. So it's just kind of hanging out there in the background, but we don't know how they're going to determine a title. Or champion, and they have the Cruiserweight Classic going on, which is great, but we have a vague idea that that's for a trophy, not the title, so it's a weird thing. They've definitely been very ambitious the last month or two, trying to respond to a lot of the feedback from people across the board on the product, trying to address the ratings, trying to get things in order, but in less than 30 days, they're going to have to contend with the NFL on Monday nights, and that's going to be a tough one. And so that's where SmackDown, if they want to start tooting their horn about the ratings like they did this past week, that's when they're going to probably have a good opportunity, because Monday nights are going to be very difficult come this fall.
Yeah, it just seemed that they had all these ideas for SmackDown, but then when they inched closer, it was almost just, well, we can't just decimate Raw. And they ended up overcompensating for Raw. That's how it feels like. And SmackDown, to me, is the show that it's got its work ahead of them. You mentioned the trophy.
Mm.
Can you imagine the winner of the Cruiserweight Classic comes out with that trophy? I guess it's going to be on Raw. But, man, you could have had Baron Corbin bring his Andre the Giant trophy, and we could have an interpromotional trophy versus trophy match.
Yeah. Well, maybe it won't. We'll actually have a metallic gold look to it instead of the Burger King or McDonald's cheese colored gold that the Andre. I see that trophy. I just want to just take a bite out of it. I don't see it as real, like a real material or real like metal. It's very odd for a trophy. It does not look like a real trophy. It almost looks like it's CG'd into the arena. But the Cruiserweight thing is going to be interesting on the flip side, and they're going to have to make sure they really shine that division up, because I know there's going to be an undercurrent of interest by agents, et cetera, to use a lot of those cruiserweights to showcase bigger guys. Because, man, they can twist on that clothesline when they feed into it, and you can military press him, and he's going to look like a ferocious monster in the ring against that little guy. There's a temptation there that's been there since my time, and I know it's just there. And I really don't want to see that be the fate of the division, but if you look at history, it tends to repeat itself, for the better or for the worse in wrestling.
SummerSlam is shaping up. We now have three matches that are official, but some different pairings than I think most anticipated, with Dean Ambrose and Dolph Ziggler, and then Finn Balor will be on the Raw side taking on Seth Rollins for the Universal title, along with Orton and Lesnar. If I had told you a month ago those are your top three matches for SummerSlam, would you be scratching your head?
Oh, of course. I mean, it's great for Dolph Ziggler. It's just everything's happening very suddenly. Sasha Banks, instead of chasing the title, just wins it. Dolph Ziggler, it's like they didn't even try to refurbish him. They just threw him right into the deep end after this reset. And I wish everything in life was as easy as just waving a wand and you can undo the damage. It doesn't work like that. So I would love to have seen some rehab on some of these characters and their journey back to the top or whatever. There's a Americans love that comeback story. Wrestling fans love that comeback story. Give us that comeback story. Maybe they can tell it in 4 or 5 weeks. We'll see with Dolph Ziggler. Just looking at this lineup, trying to figure out what is your top three matches and what match goes on last. It's hard to know because you don't know the finish that they have their designs on for Brock versus Orton, but that could be your last match. But I could see Seth Rollins being the last match. I could see them saying, listen, crowning the first Universal Champion so big and doing it in Brooklyn and having a big ceremony with confetti. That's how you go off the air. There's a story there too. It all depends on their finish and their designs in the aftermath. So, SummerSlam's going to be an interesting card. I like the card. I really do. And I think the Orton Rock match I'm liking every week a little bit more than I thought I would, which is always a pleasant surprise.
Do you think that match is now more interesting given all the stuff with Brock? Because I think if you were to talk right after UFC 200, I think it would be insane to beat Brock Lesnar. I don't know what their thinking is now, and you could certainly make an argument that Randy Orton needs this win more as one of the key babyfaces on SmackDown, especially if Brock is going to disappear after this.
You'd think, but again, you don't know the designs and how they're going to do it, and what is this set up for Brock? I would love some connective tissues between his feuds so he's not just like introduced cold come the road to WrestleMania for his next opponent. Have something, plan a seed now. I don't care if it's two ships passing the night backstage during an interview and someone, you know, pisses off Paul pisses off someone, and then Brock steps in and you have like a little just stare down, just something. Plan a seed for Brock for 2017, if this is in fact his last date for the year. If it's not, you can always tease something for Survivor Series or whatever, since I know they're trying to really revamp Survivor Series, make it a bigger deal, which makes sense.
Well, it's in Toronto this year. They have to really up the profile.
There you go. It's in Toronto. Now, I believe Toronto is part of the bizarro world that WWE considers for North of the Border. Is that true?
That's the label that Toronto has had for quite some time, though I don't think it's really really anything at this point. I mean, it was a thing that the reactions would get like years and years ago. I think there's been a lot of turnover. I don't know if you should be necessarily expecting all these wild reactions at the Survivor Series in November. We shall see.
Will you be at the Survivor Series?
No, I will not be at the Survivor Series.
Wow, you say that with disdain.
Are you going to be at SummerSlam?
No.
Oh. So you and I are not going to be going to any events that are just within driving distance.
Fuck no.
I went to Buffalo, so I went to an event. When was the last time you went to a WWE show?
I went to Madison Square Garden.
Oh, okay. Well, then we've clearly we've gone. We've been checked off for our attendance for the year. How was
pointless conversation. It was great. I had a very good time visiting and everything. It was a good show, and it's one of those things where you think about it for a moment. Is this the last time we see John Cena in the Garden? Probably not. But maybe doing a house show? It's possible.
Might be. Maybe that's where you got to take this Raw SmackDown feud, is one of the brands gets exclusivity on buildings.
Ooh, now it's becoming a shoot if you did that. MSG. I mean, one can have MSG, one can have Brooklyn.
That would be great. Could bring back John Laurinaitis. He books like the wrong arena, for instance.
Well, thankfully he was never in charge of booking buildings. He booked the cards for the buildings, and that could get funky. But now Michael Hayes pretty much handles a lot of that day in and day out for WWE. I'm sure they actually now have someone helping, because that's a lot with the touring they have going on. But you know, speaking of just the lifestyle changes, I spoke about this on MLW Radio. You know, there's a little bit of an adjustment. A lot of people like the changes, but some of the guys are like, it's great because you got another day home right now as it stands, but then you're losing one day of money a week, and that's not so well received. So
meaning the Monday.
Yes.
Yeah. I haven't seen any of if it's concrete, if they're ever going to get back to those Monday house shows, because you're right. You have a whole roster that's on the road from Saturday and Sunday, and then you have that Monday, which just essentially becomes a travel day. And you're right, you're not making anything. And those Monday shows were not very successful the first time around, but that's one of the drawbacks. If you're on SmackDown, Though I guess in some ways you do get Fridays off if you're willing to head out Saturday morning for the live event. So there is a trade-off there, I guess.
Yeah. I said, listen, it's going to all even out at the end. But in general, everyone's thrilled with what they're getting paid now. I mean, in terms of morale, when it comes to checks, everyone's really happy. So you also have the video game check cooking. So I think 2K17 is going to be a very big title for them. For some reason, I just feel like with the NXT inclusion, with Shinsuke Nakamura part of this year's game, Goldberg's going to be fun.
The McMahon family has been added.
Yes. Linda, though?
Not Linda. Shane, Stephanie, and Vince will all be characters, so that's really going to drive things up.
I'm sorry. Without Linda, I'm not buying.
You know, people will, I think, enjoy having Shane in that game. There is a massive fandom among Shane McMahon fans. They are just very passionate about all things Shane McMahon, as I've noticed this year during this comeback. This guy gets consistently one of the best reactions every week.
Yeah, well, there's always been that push for there to be more merch for him. And maybe it's well founded.
Well, he's got those SmackDown shoes now. You've always got the line of baseball jerseys of Shane McMahon matches that you can go through.
Yeah, I mean they need a Halloween mask, but other than that, they're covering it pretty well.
Boy, I don't know if that was a dig or just
I'm just saying that's like, what else is left?
You definitely gave the vibe of like his face needs to be covered or something.
No, you'd wear his face. No.
Well, based on that tan he's got, it looks like he is a pumpkin.
See, there you go. You got your pop. You happy?
All right. Lucha Underground. They're taking a couple weeks off in between seasons 2 and 3.
Like Bauer and Pollock.
Yes, exactly. Only they're going to come back for 40 weeks straight, which I guarantee you we won't be doing.
Oh, God.
So they'll be running September the 7th is when season 3 will kick off, yes. And will run until May. 40 episodes. It's their longest season to date. One thing, I guess it kind of makes sense given the short turnaround. I was kind of disappointed at the end of the second season that you didn't get that big trailer to end like they did season 1. I thought that was such a great end to the first season where you had all these different stories in play and gave you all these different reasons to come back for season 2. And they gave you a lot of breathing room before the next season started up.
Yeah. Sometimes you just don't have the wherewithal to do it. I loved it too. I like having those like Marvel post-credit type moments where you can just do something fun.
You never get that in wrestling. You never get that big break where you can really miss something and also giving you all these like it felt like a season finale, which is not something that happens in pro wrestling.
Yeah, I mean, WWE has for years sold their product as having no off season, and that's to them, to vendors, to sponsors, a big selling point. To fans, I mean, you have to now more than ever be so into wrestling. Like, I can't think of a time where you had to – it's like being a baseball junkie where you have to – like you're into all the stats and shit and all the inside baseball stuff. It's very similar. It's like you are all in or you're not. And so it's like it's a real diehard proposition for fans. Do you think about the content just WWE's pumping out? Forget any other company. We have Raw 3 hours, SmackDown 2 hours, NXT 1 hour, Cruiserweight Classic 1 hour, Superstars main event. Then you have the Total Divas show. Then you have
Total Bellas,
which appointment TV in the making, given like the extended family tree now. And then you have now 2 pay-per-view events that are 3+ hours every other week.
I love pay-per-view overruns. Uh-oh. The new thing.
Well, we've talked about it for years. It's something we have both wanted, and now they've delivered on it. So we got that.
No, two weeks in a row, we've got the SmackDown underrun, where it feels like the match ended like with 5 minutes to go, and they just had to fill time with the post-match celebration. So I'm all for that, the underrun.
If I was booking SmackDown, I'd do that too. I said, oh, I must have just done the math wrong. Hey, just have them stand out there waving. We're good. We're done. Done in an hour 50.
You bring up a point that I've raised as well, is that especially this week, this was a test, because we're going to be going through this now twice a month in September, is that you sit through that pay-per-view and you got a really solid pay-per-view, I thought, on Sunday. Conversely, Monday, you got a really solid edition of Raw. I don't care what SmackDown is doing on Tuesday. There's going to be some burnout from people that, hey, after 6-7 hours over the course of 2 nights, I'm good for the week. And SmackDown really better be providing something I'm not getting on Monday night that's going to bring me back for a third straight night. And I think they're going to run into that problem where there's going to be weeks that people are just simply, they've got their fill of WWE for the week, and they can wait 7 days.
Some people are going to try to pick and choose, and I'm curious to see what they pick, what they choose, and how they're able to follow the product, and if they enjoy it. You know, you're changing people's habits right now. And by the way, as we record this, I just got an email in my inbox. Variety breaking news. John Cena's American Grit renewed for second season by Fox.
Whoa. Wow, I'm stunned by that one. Because that was not a roaring success on Fox.
The season finale drew a 0.7 rating among adults 18 to 49 in Nielsen Live Plus same day ratings. So there you go. And they reference his 2016 hosting of the ESPYs on ABC. And he will, on the 31st of this month, in just 2 days, he'll be co-hosting the 2016 Teen Choice Awards with Victoria Justice. So there you have it. John Cena continuing to pivot outside of wrestling and go in a different direction.
Do they say if it's going to stay on Thursday nights?
They said nope, they just said it was renewed, and they haven't mentioned anything about that yet. I'm sure they will soon.
Well, there you have some breaking news courtesy of Court Bauer and Variety. Some other topics to discuss. The G1 is ongoing. We're almost at the midway point. Have you been sampling any of the G1 at this point, Court, or are you waiting to dive into things as we get later into the tournament?
Oh, yeah. I've even watched some of the Super J Cup. And I just wanted to circle back on the Cena thing for a moment. It's fascinating that his profile has gone big enough that when his show is renewed, it's breaking news in Variety. That alone to me is pretty impressive to say. I think a few years ago that it would not even have been covered by Variety. The fact that it's breaking news and it's hitting my inbox along with, you know, big, you know, a lot of Variety breaking news, it's much bigger stories, bigger players. The fact that John Cena warrants that is telling. And
I think the ESPYs were a big step up for him. I think he did tremendously well with the opening and hosting that. And I think a lot of important people saw that performance. And yes, he's had the cameos in the various movie roles, but to me, that ESPY performance, I think, really broke him through to a new clientele.
You got to see him in a mainstream setting and wearing a suit, and you know, it's like, it's a totally different presentation for a lot of people. Now, for us, it sounds absurd, but for a lot of other people, it really changed a lot. In a lot of ways, what it was for Dwayne Johnson to be on SNL, the ESPYs for John Cena, it was a similar thing. It totally opened up a whole new world. And I think that's why his show got a new lease on life.
Yeah, I wonder if he's that far away from getting a hosting spot on SNL. You have the natural tie-in with NBC. I could see him being at a level now where SNL would be interested. He's done cameos on it in the past. He did one with Tracy Morgan, I recall. But I could certainly see him in the next season hosting. He's pretty hot right now when it comes to that world.
Yeah, and you have the synergy of the Today Show, which he has a presence on. So on top of the WWE rub, you got that. It's like there's a lot of the universe seems to be aligning for something like that. So, yeah, interesting. And I think he'd do really well. Would he do at the level Rock did back in the day? Oh, who knows? But Rock was he's just a once-in-a-lifetime type guy. I'm not knocking Cena at all. Cena's done amazing stuff. But now we're looking at WWE as they reposition John Cena. And it'll be interesting to see what 2017 looks like for him and how where they go. But I think his star is going to rise, and he'll have a lot more value to WWE, but maybe on a more part-time basis than, say, the full-time guy. He was the Iron Man, the Lou Gehrig for WWE for over a decade, and now he's having to scale back, but that means his participation is all the more special. You know, we had that special run last year with the U.S. title, and he did amazing work with that. And I think when it's all said and done, a lot of people are going to be a lot less negative on John Cena when they look at his body of work from start to finish than they might have been in, say, 2007.
Yeah, to be honest, I never really hear that much negativity about John Cena whenever he's brought up.
Not anymore.
Amongst people.
No, not anymore.
I think it's largely, I mean, there's a certain mentality people had of John Cena that I think most people, when they're honestly speaking about the guy, I don't see too much negativity towards him. I mean, there's there's positives and negatives to any top performer. They're in that spotlight and they get criticism. But I think most people, even the most ardent critic of John Cena, can see at this guy's work ethic, which I don't know if it will be matched by whoever the next top guy is, or if it's spread around. John Cena will need to be replaced by multiple people to cover all of the different areas of what this guy's gotten involved with and been the go-to person for in this company going back over a decade now as their featured guy.
Yeah, he is their go-to guy, and the future for him is looking very bright for WWE. They need all the star power they can get, and they're leaning more and more on that part-timer thing as a crutch, for better or for worse. Now, you have Brock that's just north of he's like 38, 39 now, and you have John Cena looking at 40 as well. Randy Orton's not too far behind, which is shocking. And AJ Styles, all these guys right around that 40-year mark. And now more than ever, you really got to look at guys in their early 20s and say, okay, we're pegging him. And if he doesn't work out, we got him and him and him. They need more of those guys. You always need more of those guys. And so that's what they're sinking a lot of money into with the WWE Performance Center and recruiting aggressively, not just stateside, but abroad. And so we'll see what those guys look like. But the September class is going to be interesting. You're going to have a lot of interesting guys coming in, guys like Roderick Strong, guys like maybe Big Damo from across the way in Ireland, who I think is terrific. And if you haven't seen him, check him out. He's badass.
You know, every week we throw together some topic ideas, and I'm just looking here at your list, Court, of this past week where we had the brand split, the quarterly financial results, the latest on Brock Lesnar, all of this stuff.
Yes.
Number one on your list. Right at the top,
yes.
The first thing out of your head when it was 2 weeks since we've talked, Bootio cereal.
Bootylicious.
Anything you want to discuss about Bootio cereal?
Do you know how much it retails for at WWE house shows?
$15.
$10
for the cereal? You know what? Way actually bought the cardboard cutout of the cereal box, the empty box. The empty box is $5. So it's double for an actual full box of cereal. So when you look at it like that, Court, it's a steal. $10 cereal. It's probably awful as well.
Well, it could be delicious. That's why it's $10. It could really just change your whole outlook on everything.
I just imagine this cereal being transported from town to town to town over the months. I don't know. Maybe someone can try it and give us a review of the Bootio's cereal.
Cereal doesn't go bad that quickly. I think they're going to be okay, but I would have preferred they bring back the ice cream bars. Who doesn't love those old school WWF ice cream bars? Poor CM Punk. I think if they had done that for him, he wouldn't be in the UFC in the next month. He'd be over here in the wrestling world.
Missed his calling with those ice cream bars for sure. Before we wrap things up, what do you want to tackle here? We have a lot of small topics here.
All right, we'll spin the wheel, make the deal.
All right, the NWA Fan Fest is coming up next week in Charlotte. Jim Ross is going to be there. Jim Cornette's going to be there. A host of legends. I believe Arn Anderson is going to be there. Too many names to list, but this is always a very fun convention for those that go. They do these great Q&As. Last year, they were screening the documentary on the history of Mid-Atlantic. Mm-hmm. Lots of fun stuff to check out.
Yeah, it's a convention that, you know, it's a rare opportunity to check in and meet some of the legends if you haven't or get a picture with them. They always have some cool stuff. There's going to be a live Jim Cornette experience, which I think his plan is to actually, God willing, if technology allows it, be a live show that will end up being his podcast next Thursday or Friday.
I wish it coincided with one of the conventions and he could do like Bill Maher did this week where he goes live right after the convention festivities. He could do a post show.
I would love to be able to pitch Jim Cornette like on election night. We're just going to have like this like election center coverage with him hosting and just have him go late until the night until we have a decision on who the next president is.
He should do a segment instead of new rules. It should be new fools. And he just cuts down people on a weekly basis. Who are the fools of the week?
I don't think he'd be that PG with the term.
Yeah, you're right. It would have to be a little more profane.
just a little.
let's end off here. Dave Meltzer was honored with the Jim Melby Award last weekend at the Waterloo, Iowa Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame for excellence in journalism. A number of great reporters have received this in the past, and Dave Meltzer, who is, of course, a close friend of both MLW and the law, certainly very deserving of said award.
You said it like Mean Gene says, a close personal friend of mine over here.
Yeah, but whenever Gene says it, I always assume the tongue is firmly planted in cheek. Mine is sincere.
Oh, no, I think I don't know, not with Gene Okerlund, never. No, but and just to clarify, you know, just 2 years ago, Dave Meltzer received another Excellence in Journalism Award. Of course, that was from at Wally Mania, but we still gave him a plaque.
Look at you, always working in your own branding.
The branding, just acknowledgement. That's an acknowledgement. We beat
time
everyone
it was
to it.
The MLW seal of approval for books. This time it's the MLW award.
We are going to also be offering podcast headsets soon. So no, I'm just kidding.
you get some deal off with Dr. Dre, maybe. Get some MLW beats going.
We're actually working on some serial ideas for some of the MLW podcasts out there. Sullivan and MSL have an idea. It's going to be like Lucky Charms.
Oh, that sounds fantastic. How much will those retail for?
$30.
$30. Nice. Well, my last burning question, Court Bauer,
yes,
before we wrap up another week. Mm-hmm. Have you been watching season 2 of Bloodline?
I just am finishing season 1. I was told to go back and try it. I watched
the
first
episode.
Oh, yeah,
you didn't like this first season.
No. It was a very slow burn. And then, of all people, Steve Austin's like, dude, you got to give it a try. I did. God damn it. That guy should be making money from Netflix. I think he's turned more people in the wrestling business on to Bloodline than anyone. And it's a good show. I really have enjoyed season 1. And then I'm going to kick into season 2 maybe this weekend.
Season 2, I'm really enjoying season 2. I'm taking my time with it because I just think it's really well done. And some people have been critical of the second season. I'm really enjoying it a lot.
And I also have to
I don't want to ruin anything because I don't know where you are yet, especially if you haven't finished season 1.
I'm on season 1. I'm way behind.
I can't talk about anything then.
No, it's best. We don't do the spoiler thing on this show, right? We're not going to tell you who won or lost on Lucha Underground because fuck. That's not a cool thing to do. But before we shut it down, the Triple Mania card, speaking of Lucha, just to give a little international perspective, the Triple Mania 24 card was just announced, and there's a big Lucha Underground tie-in.
Yes, Triple Mania is going to be coming up on – where's the date here? August 28th.
Sunday, yeah.
Arena Ciudad. So well, do they know – is this going to be pay-per-view, iPay-per-view? Have they made that announcement yet?
From what I understand, there could be some sort of movement to bring it stateside on in some capacity. Is it going to be on pay-per-view like last year? Probably not. Is there going to be some sort of option for American fans or Canadian fans? There's a good chance. What is it going to be? Where is it going to be? That'll probably be decided by August 27th.
you'll get the press release quickly at the end. They've announced Pentagon Jr. Yeah. Taking on Johnny Mundo as well. Brian Cage will be working the show against Tejano Jr. and Dr. Wagner Jr., who was introduced in season 2.
Mm-hmm.
That amongst the matches announced thus far. Plus, I'm just looking here at the AAA tag match, the four-way with Angelico and Jack Evans against Paul London and Matt Cross.
Cool.
Who is Son of Havoc, Aerostar and Drago are the third team, and then Phoenix and King Cuerno.
I think if you look at this lineup compared to 23, it blows it away. It's literally light years away because they're not using old guys. It's really, really a much better lineup. So God willing, they can maybe figure out a way to put it up on the U.S. and Canadian TV or internet and Rocket because it's a really good lineup.
Yeah, it's also got Rey Mysterio working for AAA here with Prince Puma and El Dragon Azteca Jr. against Mil Muertes, Matanza, and Marty the Moth. So Mil Muertes and Matanza, I guess they've put some of their bad blood to rest here, and they will align. And with Marty the Moth, of all people.
Listen, it's the match made in heaven, and it's the match made in hell. One of my favorite SummerSlam promos of all time.
Is someone getting married on this Triple Mania card?
We got to figure that one out. That there you go. It needs a marriage. It's been a while since wrestling's had a really good marriage angle. I feel like Matt Hardy should renew his vows. This is about the right time for it.
What is your conclusion on Broken Matt Hardy? Because he's my favorite character on TNA at the moment.
It's awesome. I think that was, in a lot of ways, like, it got people looking at the product. People enjoyed it. It was people weren't going nuts criticizing it. It really was, for the most part, very well received. And I think now people are looking at what they're doing. They're slowly introducing some new talent, like Moose recently. And Bobby Lashley's really found his voice and I think has done a great job. And I think there's a lot of just slow adjustments that are making the product a lot better. And overall, I got to say, you can't compare it to, of course, WWE for so many reasons, the budget, the resources, everything. But for where TNA was versus just a year or two ago, for what they are now, you gotta give them a round. They've done, I think, a very commendable job. And so I who knows what their future is? We've always asked that question. Whenever it's, you talk about TNA, it's always, well, where are they going to be in a week or a month? Who knows? But right now, they have proven to have more lives than any other wrestling promotion I've ever heard of in all of the years. But at the same time, they're putting their product out there, and I think in a much better way than they've ever done. So
I honestly feel like the last number of months is the best Impact has been in quite a long time.
Yep.
I think in a weird way, this final deletion, it did bring an attention and awareness to TNA that has been void for a while at this point. And there's a lot of good different elements and characters that they have on this show. And is the show perfect? No, but you mentioned the Galloways and the Lashleys, and you have, you know, even the X Division stuff and putting the title on Lashley. I think Eli Drake is a really enjoyable talker. I think that he's got a real confidence about himself, and I'm finding Impact, I'm enjoying it most weeks. And I think that Matt Hardy is just he's been excellent in this role.
He's terrific.
He's totally reinvented himself. And I think I look forward every time he comes on the screen. There isn't, to me, a burnout of this character. I think it's really worked well. And to his credit, there is no one that could play this role other than Jeff Hardy as the foil to Broken Matt Hardy. I don't think anyone could possibly play what Jeff Hardy is doing at the moment and have that sympathy with the audience.
Well, and it really was a big risk for Matt to do something so crazy and radical. And to do that is commendable, because for a guy like that, it's just easier just to be what you've been for 1,000 years and go out, make towns, get your merch money, and that's it. Why fuck with it? Look at like Robert Gibson and Ricky Morton. They've been the Rock and Roll Express for an eternity. And rightfully so.
Could you imagine Broken Robert Gibson?
Yes. Oh my God. Now, if you put those two in this concept, I would love to actually see them somehow involved now.
Broken Robert Gibson. Brother Morton.
That's what WCW should have done in 91. That's what they should have done instead of where they went with that angle. Unfortunately, they went in a different direction.
The funniest part is the visual in my head. I can instantly see Robert Gibson doing Broken Matt Hardy like 15 years ago. And it would have been awesome.
15 years ago? You mean 25 years ago?
Well, I'm saying when they were really – they definitely felt the pressure to reinvent at that point. I mean, they were still going strong 15 years ago on the indie circuit.
Rock and rolls?
Oh, yeah, man.
I'll tell you, I remember –
how many reunions have they had over the last 15 years?
But I remember like in 91 is like when you felt like, well, there's still enough in the tank left that if you redid them, split them up, maybe you could do something. That's where the York Foundation thing went down, and you had Richard Morton. They tried to like – they ponytailed the mullet and slicked back his hair and everything. It was a Terry Taylor, but it was such a toned down thing. Whereas Matt took this thing so over the top, and I think it's worked so well because he went so far over the top. Like he was fearless with this, really, from a business sense, from a creative sense, he was fearless. And so that is just so commendable when you look at a guy like that that's willing to do that. My hat goes off. And we look at TNA too with the Cruiserweight division rebooted in WWE. We talked about some of the challenges based on the past that they might face. It's a great time for TNA to rev up the X division and say, we're going to prove we can outdo you on this thing. And they might be able to do it.
Well, that is going to bring this show to an end. We will be back in 2 weeks' time on August.
Delete. I will not be able to do in 2 weeks.
Oh, you won't be.
No, we'll be looking at the flip side of SummerSlam.
Okay. Well, there you have it, folks. We will be back on the flip side of SummerSlam, according to Court Bauer. But in the meantime, what can people check out at MLW Radio? I believe you have about 10,000 shows that have come out of late.
Oh, just like you guys. Come on now.
Oh, 20,000. There you have it.
One of your podcasts, for God's sakes. Don't try to knock us for that. We haven't done the brand split on a podcast yet. We will, though.
You'll get there.
We'll get there. We all do. We have a very special free writer's room coming out late Sunday with Greeny, talking with Bruce Pritchard, who Alex and I have spoken about in the past on Writers.
Are you on that show?
No, but I did talk to Bruce. So you'll hear it all play out on the Writers Room on Sunday. It's a free show. Go to MLWRadio.com. You don't want to miss that show. It's a real can't-miss show. Bruce has done anything and everything in WWE, TNA, Houston Wrestling, all points in between over the last 40 plus years. So it's
what about Rio Rogers? Is Rio Rogers brought up in this
chat? You always go for the most obscure shit.
God damn. I just saw a clip with Rio Rogers actually the other day, so that's why I'm asking.
Jeez.
He was interviewing Shawn Michaels.
So we have that going on Sunday. Ric Flair has a new show out with Shawn Michaels. They talk about the Rolex watches. Rick reneging on his retirement and going to TNA and his thoughts on it and Sean's thoughts on it. And Rick also gives his controversial opinion on will Finn Balor main event WrestleMania.
Oh, boy. Well, if it's controversial, I'll guess that Rick's on the side of no. But we'll find out. You'll have to listen.
And so check that all out. MLWRadio.com is the place to go. We have new shows with Jim Cornette, Kevin Sullivan, and, yes, Ric Flair. Half of the WCW booking committee in 89. Not bad.
Boy, all right. Well, there you have it. That's going to wrap up the show. You can go to liveaudiowrestling.com where we have all of our usual shows up. I have been covering the G1 extensively. We have shows running down all of the tournament matches that have occurred thus far. And then we will be back Sunday night with The Law at 11:30 Eastern. It's myself and Jason Agnew for 2 full hours. Dave Meltzer will be on the show. And you can catch that Bill Goldberg interview we mentioned at either the website or youtube.com/liveaudiowrestling. So go follow at Court Bauer, at Law Radio, and we will chat with you in time.